Following a 24-16 loss to the Baltimore Ravens in London, Tennessee Titans have an open date in their schedule that gives the players time to rest and to recover. Arguably, no one needs it more than quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who is an injured ankle for the third time in about a year now. Coaches and personnel people, on the other hand, have time to think. Titans are 2-4, last place in the division. Not exactly looking like Super Bowl contenders at this point, and the trade deadline is 2 weeks away. You've got some big names in the final years of their contracts, guys who would probably be intriguing to other teams who have more legitimate playoff hopes right now. So as we get into this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast, we will ponder what the Titans should be thinking about during this time and going forward as they come out of this open date in their schedule. With the usual lineup, former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good this evening, David. How you doing?
I am doing great. I, of course, am David Beauclair, and we also have John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
Hope you guys are.
Doing great. Doing great. Okay, well, let's get right to it. At 2-4, trade deadline's out there. You've got these guys who would. You know, fetch you something certainly in the trade market. Denard Walker, should the Titans be thinking about unloading some people, collecting some draft capital, and just looking to the future at this point?
No, because the season is not over, David. They're 2-4. Let's not forget, since 2000, there's been 11 teams that started off 2-4 and they ended up making the playoffs. So the season's not over with. And really, when you look at this team, David, it's more self-inflicted more than anything that they have to correct. When you look at this team, look at the special teams play Sunday. It was poor. You're talking about what? There were 6 points off of special teams alone. It could have been 18-16. They had a personal foul, which ended up leading to a touchdown by Jeffrey shoving Odell Beckham. He knows better than that. So a lot of what this team is doing, they're hurting themselves. And that's something that Coach Vrabel can't correct. So until they correct that, you're going to see more of this. But I will say this, David, let me get this out. Yeah. If you're going to make a trade, you better start at the offensive line right now. This unit has given up, 23 sacks through 6 games this season. We know that Baltimore, coming into this game, they are stingy on defense. They had 18. They ended up now they're 24. They lead the league or tied with Buffalo. So, again, if you're going to make a move, you better make sure it's at the offensive line first.
John Glennon, do you agree? Titans should stick with it, see what they can grind out here for a little while, or is it time to cut bait and just think about the future?
Cut bait here, unfortunately. You could make a case, as Denard did, that there's reasons for keeping the team whole right now. But I don't think there's enough of a case. Not in my opinion. Some other factors, I think if there were a number of Titans that were injured right now, and you could say, okay, well, when all these guys get back, hey, this Titans team is going to be much better. There aren't a lot, Treylon Burks will come back and will certainly help, but I don't think that's a huge, single-handed difference maker on the team. You could also say, hey, that's, 6 weeks into the season, the Titans are only 2 games out of first place. And they've still got 5 division games left. Definitely true as well. And you're in the AFC South. So you're seems like you're always in a potential playoff situation. But to me, I think it's like, let's be honest here. Even if this team was somehow to kind of turn things around a little bit and even, qualify for a playoff spot somehow, look at the contending teams right now in the AFC. You're looking at, Bills, Dolphins, Ravens, Browns, Chiefs, and the Bengals. I just don't see the Titans competing with these teams right now. I don't like what I've seen for the most part somehow or so far in the first six games. I look down the line, and as you talked about, you've got a number of guys in their last year of the contract. Whether that's Danico Autry, Christian Fulton, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, names that could get you some draft capital, and this team needs draft capital right now. This is what they have in the 2024 draft: a first, a second, a fourth, and either 2 or 3 7th round picks, but depending on who you believe at this point. But that's not much, and this is a team that needs a lot of work into the future. And if you're looking at those guys with 1 year left on their contract and saying they're not part of the future, and this team isn't very good with them right now, I say it's time to cut bait and make some moves if you can. You're not going to get 5 first-round picks out of moving some of these guys or whatever. But if you can get a few more draft picks, that's a few more opportunities to score and build for the future.
Yeah, two things that I think are really important to note for me. One of them is, Rand Carthen, the general manager, did not put this roster together. He inherited a big part of this roster, so he doesn't have any deep affinity for a lot of these guys. And then number two, you look at the 2020 and 2021 draft classes, which guys that are in their third and fourth year, that should be your prime in the NFL for the vast majority of guys. You're getting virtually nothing from those two draft classes. Of the six draft picks you had in 2020, the only guy who's still on the team at this point is Christian Fulton, who, we talked about it at length last week, is really struggling this point. You got absolutely nothing out of first round pick Isaiah Wilson. You got basically nothing out of third round pick Darrington Evans. And you go to 2021, where Caleb Farley, your first round pick, has given you virtually nothing to this point. Your second round pick, Dylan Raiden, has given you a little more than nothing, but not much. Monty Rice and Elijah Molden, third round picks, have had their moments, as has fourth round pick Rashad Weaver. None of those guys, though, are starters and established pieces of this team. I mean, you at some point you're going to, you need the draft to pay off. Like, no one's going to hit on all of their draft picks, but that is way too many misses for any one team to absorb at that point. And you think about, John, when you talk about the relatively small number of draft picks the Titans have, they're getting nothing in terms of compensatory picks. Based off what's going to happen this year, you're not going to add that way. You're probably not going to add based on what you lose from the 2021 draft. So if you're gonna build through the draft, if you're gonna try and redo this thing, you're gonna have to collect draft picks some other ways, and trading guys at the deadline, which is becoming more popular in the NFL in recent seasons, seems like the way to go. And to your point, Denard, I mean, I know it's players and coaches certainly aren't having these discussions. They certainly aren't wired to think that way. They are they are wired to think that, okay, we've got a week off. We've got time here to rest and get healthy. And then we've got a game against the Atlanta Falcons that we have to go win. But I also think, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the only one who's seen this, but I doubt this. Like, I feel like I want to play poker with Mike Vrabel because he does not do a good job of hiding his emotions. And a couple times this season already, and Sunday in London was an example of that. Like, he just looked like he knew the Titans didn't have any answers in that game to the things that were going wrong. You compare that to 2020 and 2021, for example, where you could see it. Like, he felt like even when things were going wrong, they were going to find a way. I mean, the look of dismay on his face right now, I think in his heart of hearts, he sort of understands the shortcomings of this team and knows that the chances of them actually putting this thing together and making a run are slim to none. And people will point out, they'll say, well, you know, this team was 2-4 in 2019, and look what happened that year. They ended up in the playoffs and in the conference championship game and everything else. The big thing, though, was at 2-4, they made a change at quarterback. That's when they went from Marcus Mariota to Ryan Tannehill, and that had a huge effect. If anybody sees any move they could possibly make that would have a similar effect this year, feel free to speak up, because I sure don't see it.
I was going to say also, David, when we talked about Mike Vrabel, I agree with you just on some of the shots that the camera had of him in the game against the Ravens. You wish there was like the little thought bubble.
Yeah.
You could read the thought bubble coming out, because some of the look in his eyes was just not particularly happy. But even some of the comments that he had made, you know, one after the game, he was asked, you know, are all the, you know, are these problems correctable, or are some of them, you know, some of the problems with your team not correctable? And boy, that's a knee jerk reaction response for a coach to say, well, of course they're correctable. You know, we get in, but we get back to practice, we do this, we do that. And Mike Vrabel's response was kind of, he said, you know, maybe not. It was sort of like, I can't remember the exact wording, but it was like, maybe not, probably not. And then he went into something else, and that was an eye opener. And then just this on Monday after he got back, he was asked, you know, if he would consider moving, you know, some assets in order to get draft picks down the line. And again, normally the knee jerk response I would think for coaches, no, we've got all we need on this team. You know, there's no reason to do that kind of thing. And he said, I think we'd always try to consider strengthening the team, whether that's right now, this week, or in the future. So absolutely. Again, when he is saying those kind of things, instead of kind of the normal coaching response of everything is fine, everything, we can correct everything, that to me, I don't know, certainly opens the door to you know, some wheeling and dealing as we get closer to the deadline.
Denard, how deep does a player have to go into the season before he's willing to admit to himself, you know what, maybe we're not good enough? Because, you know, you said it, the thinking, your thinking as you view this is, look, you're 2-4, you have 11 games left in this season. That's a long way to go. That's a lot of games to potentially win. You know, your focus is going to be on beating the Atlanta Falcons right now. You know, at what point, how bad does it have to get before players will, you know, kind of talk amongst themselves in the locker room and just start saying, you know, we're not very good this year?
That happens at the later part of the season when you know you have no chance in making the playoffs. A true consummate pro and a team that's full of pro play. Every team has professional football players, but they don't have a pro-like mentality. And that's the job of your captains, is when the morale of your team is shaking a little bit, especially the first part of the season, you need your leaders to step up and say, listen, we are better than this. That's why you have Kevin Byard. That's why you have Ryan Tannehill. That's why you have players like Treylon Burks. And you think about D-Hop, you add him to the mix. You had Jeffrey Simmons, you just paid him a load of money. But when you start talking about giving up now, especially if you're the coach, if the coach calls it quits, then yeah, you're in trouble. And I've seen and I've been a part of a locker room like that, David. And it was like that in Las Vegas for me when I was in Oakland. And I tell you what, North Turner did. Some of the players took a shot. But right now, what this team have to do, David, if you look at this game Sunday, they allowed, what was it? Justin Tucker has 6 field goals.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you look at this team offensively, how many times were they in the red zone? It was about 4 or 5 times I counted.
Yeah.
They come away with what, 6 points? 6 or 9. I don't know how. I stopped counting.
Yeah, when the red zone was the story of that game.
The red zone has been the Achilles heel for this offense. And David, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this the best red zone offense last year in the league?
Oh, if you look over the last, say, 4 or 5 years, it's been the number one.
Been the number one red zone offensive team. They're not clicking right now. And if you think about the play calling, when you're bread and butter – is the Wildcat, then there's something wrong. And that's really where you're generating a lot of your momentum or you're getting a lot of yards. But when you think about it, and I go back to plays, plays kind of dictate the course of the game. You remember the third and two, Tim Kelly calls a he calls a pass play, the interception play by Geno. And what happened was, I'm thinking at third and two, you got the best running back in the league and you're going to call a pass on a third down and two. I mean, that's some of that you have to question. That's offensive. That's the offensive coordinators. And I'm just looking at this team right now. They're in disarray. That's the problem. This is a good football team. What they're doing is they're hurting themselves. We haven't even talked about special teams. I mean, that hasn't even been an issue because of the play of Nick Folk. But when you look at this team's special teams, Baltimore was able to capitalize 6 points by a muff punt by Kyle Phillips. And then you're talking about the Duvernay punt return. David, that's demoralizing to a team. And that's what happened to the defense. It's like they got tired out of all the mistakes that was going on with the rest of the units.
Yeah, but they. I mean, give the defense credit for standing their ground and forcing field goals all day. Right? I mean, that's and you know, it's interesting. I mentioned last week that Tim Kelly does not have a particularly good history of red zone success as an offensive coordinator. And Todd Downing, who became a whipping boy for most of the fans the last couple of seasons. Titans had the number 5 red zone offense in 2021 and the number 6 red zone offense in 2022, to your point, Denard, with Todd Downing calling the play. So, you know, Tim Kelly might want to go find Todd Downing's playbook, at least get the red zone package out of there and see what he can find, because if nothing else, it seems like Todd Downing was better in that regard. While we're talking about the offense, that's going to be a big question, big topic of conversation for the next week or so, because as mentioned, Ryan Tannehill did not finish the game in London. Another ankle injury. It's been reported that it's a high ankle sprain, and as we all know, the high ankle sprains are a little tougher than your run of the mill ankle sprain to come back from. You know, Ryan Tannehill's a guy who wants to be out on the field, wants to do everything he can to be out on the field. But John Glennon, this is the question everybody's asking. If it's not Ryan Tannehill against the Atlanta Falcons, is it Malik Willis or is it Will Levis, and why?
I had to put a dollar on it right now. I'm going to say it would be Will Levis. I think, you know, you can certainly make a case for giving Malik Willis a chance at being a starter. You know, we saw him come in at the end of the game against the Ravens, you know, a small sample size in a tough situation. You know, he had some ups and downs. To me, the most disappointing thing was kind of that, still the one nagging issue that keeps tugging at him, is that hesitation in the pocket. He had just 12 dropbacks. He had 4 sacks and 3 scrambles. He only managed to get the ball out 5 times and 12 dropbacks. Ryan Tannehill was facing that same Ravens rush, you know, throughout the game, 18 dropbacks. He got 16 passes off. You know, he was sacked twice. And you look at the time throwing the ball also. Malik, 3.55 seconds to get that ball off. Ryan Tannehill was at 2.42. So that's the one issue that you know, keeps nagging at Malik Willis, that, you know, he hasn't got a real good hold on yet. So, again, all that to say, I think Malik Willis would be better, you know, if given a week leading up, you know, to say, hey, Malik, you're going to be our starter. You take first team reps this week. You know, here's the game plan. You know, I think we'd see a better Malik Willis. But at this point, I just don't know if the Titans see enough in Malik Willis, you know, to give him that shot, you know, and consider the fact too that the Titans have basically, you know, sort of voted against Malik Willis as a starter twice in two different ways. You know, last year, obviously they picked up Josh Dobbs instead of you know, starting Malik Willis towards the end of the season. You know, again, in the offseason, instead of sticking with Malik Willis as a potential start of the future, they drafted Will Levis too. The new GM did that. So I don't know. I just have a feeling that it might be Will Levis' time, that they might be ready to give him a look, that they might feel like, okay, we've seen what Malik Willis has done. You know, let's see our see what our rookie, the guy we just took, our new general manager just took and drafted up, or traded up rather, to get him in the draft. We want to get a look at him. So that's my guess at this point.
Yeah, Denard, if you're Mike Vrabel and you have to make this decision, which way are you going?
Man, that's tough. Oh man, do you say we're gonna give, you know, Will a chance to showcase his skill, or are we gonna go with the young man that we drafted last year real high and we've been high on him? I like Malik. I really do. I thought when he got in there in the fourth quarter Sunday, I thought he did a great job. Again, he's not quick to run like last year. We saw him kind of sit in the pocket a little bit, and then he used that athleticism. And that's what you love about Malik, is his athleticism. You saw where he was able to elude that pass rush from Baltimore, get out, escape. Unfortunately, had a man on the edge. I loved the little first when he first came in, did a little zone read. He rolled out and it threw a beautiful out route. So I saw a lot of improvement with Malik. I just think Malik gives you a different dimension because of his feet. He's just great with his legs. But again, I hope we don't have to come to that, because both of these guys are unpolished. And right now they're both young. So if you're Atlanta, yeah, you're hoping to see one of them. But I sure hope mine is back. And thank goodness that they got a bye week this week.
Yeah, and it should be noted that Mike Vrabel did say unequivocally, if Ryan Tannehill is healthy, Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback. He, you know, trades or not, this is, you know, this is not a move that the Titans are considering right now. But I think in terms of Levis against Willis, this, I agree with you, John. This was a decision that was made months ago. Because it just in drafting Levis alone, it basically said, you know, it was a reaffirmation that the Titans didn't trust Malik Willis as a starter. The only way I think you could go with Malik Willis is to sort of run counter to the coaching that you've given him to this point, with which is to say, you know, given the issues on the offensive line, Malik, your athleticism, your escapability, your ability to run gives us some hope back there. So, you know, you do it. If you feel even the slightest bit of pressure, take off and run and do those sorts of things. Don't stand in the pocket and wait for the rush to get to you, even though we have told you stay in the pocket, keep your eyes downfield, those sorts of things. But you know, you look at the seven quarterbacks drafted in 2022, of which Willis, of course, was one of them. All of them have started at least a couple of games in the NFL to this point, including the likes of Bailey Zappe and Skylar Thompson. Obviously, the best of the bunch is Brock Purdy. Kenny Pickett has had his moments in Pittsburgh, but Malik Willis's sack rate is 17.5%. And this, you know, piling on to what John was saying with him holding the ball too long. Sam Howell in Washington's the only other one of that group who's above 10 at 13.7. You know, Willis's interception rate is 4.5, which is the highest of that group. He hasn't thrown a touchdown pass to this, you know, in a regular season game at this point. And he just hasn't measured up to even that group, which was not a sterling quarterback group. And I just don't, you know, I when you were willing to take Josh Dobbs off the street last December for two games where you're trying to get in the playoffs, it just shows how little they trust this guy right now. And you know, maybe Malik Willis will get it one day and will be a terrific quarterback in this league. But I just don't see it. I don't think the Titans see it right now. And this is, you know, I don't think if there's a decision to be made, I really don't think there's any choice. I think it's Will Levis and you see what you got in him, because he's probably the guy that they look at as Ryan Tannehill's replacement next year. While we're talking about replacements, there were some moves made in the Baltimore game where, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week. Nicholas Petit-Frere did not start at left tackle, but eventually went in the game, replaced Andre Dillard, who was struggling again. Christian Fulton, once again at cornerback, was having some issues. Trey Avery went in the game for him at a time and came back out. Fulton then finished the game. But this week with no game, DiNardo, do you look at those as precursors to actual lineup changes going forward? I mean, is it conceivable that an undrafted rookie in 2022 could be starting ahead of 2020 second round pick Christian Fulton next time the Titans step on the field?
It could happen, but let me just say what I like is, and we talked about this last week, as I alluded to, kind of sitting him down to just kind of settle him down. And that's what coaches will do. But what I love with Chris Harris and Mike Vrabel, when they got together, I'm pretty sure they discussed that. What are we going to do with Christian is the fact that, yeah, they sat him down for a while, but you saw them put him back in the game. That's what you want, because what you do not want to do is when you bench a guy, what happens is you can lose a guy. And he can also lose his confidence for the season. So what happens if Trey Avery or somebody get banged up and you got to bring that player back in? You don't want some guy that's been thinking, okay, well, I'm depleted right now. And that's what you don't want. David, let me just kind of give you a quick overview. That happened in Denver when I was there with Delta O'Neal. Prior to, in 2000, 2001, he made the Pro Bowl. Come back the next year, Mike Shanahan benched him. And what happened was defensive back coach David Gibbs and Ron Miles came to me and they said, Denard, how would you feel, even though we're going to bench Delta, we're going to start Tyrone Poole, but what we would like to do is every other series, we want to bring Delta back in so we don't lose his confidence. We want him to keep going. I thought it was an amazing idea. And so when you watched our secondary, sometimes you would watch me do a couple series and I'm out, Delta's in. The reason that you do that is you don't want to lose that player. And I thought Sunday, he didn't play bad, okay, when he was in the game. Let's just be honest. He wasn't getting turned around Sunday, so that's a good thing. So what you don't want to do, David and John, you don't want to lose him at this point of the season. He's talented. If he wasn't talented, they wouldn't have drafted him that high. So once again, I thought it was a great move. That happened to me in the Super Bowl. They set me down for a while, settled down, you know, regroup. And what happens is you get a chance to kind of see other players play, and you kind of learn from others. And I think that was a great job what Chris Harris and Mike Vrabel did in implementing him back into the game plan Sunday.
John Glennon, we'll go to the left tackle spot then with you. Nicholas Petit-Frere, I recall you talking about last week, didn't play the spot a ton in college. Is it conceivable he could be a starting left tackle in week eight of his second year in the NFL, and should he be at this point?
I think it's looking more and more that way. Yeah, he actually, you know, he played both tackle spots in college, and actually his last year at Ohio State, he was more left tackle than anything else. So that, you know, it wasn't that far in his past. So it wasn't, I don't think, as radical a switch. You know, even though he played right tackle his rookie year, the entire season, 16 games out of 17, you know, I think maybe the little bit of that memory, you know, it was still there for Nicholas Petit-Frere. That said, neither of those guys, you know, Diller's primary issue all year has been pass protection. You know, he's been okay in the run game, and neither Dillard nor Petit-Frere were good in pass pro. The numbers, Dillard, 24 snaps. He allowed 4 pressures, a sack, 2 hits, and a hurry. His PFF grade, 34.3 overall. Nicholas Petit-Frere did not top that. He had 32 snaps, 4 pressures, 2 sacks, 2 hurries, and a 32.2 overall offensive grade. So not a good one for either, but I do I think we're going to see Petit Frere going forward, and one of the reasons I say that is because of what Mike Vrabel said on Monday when he was kind of asked to assess Nicolas Petit Frere, and one of the things he said was he was into. He said, "I like the fact that Nick was into it, that he acted like he wanted to be out there, acted like he loved it, was pushing the piles, jumping over the piles, driving, diving around, and doing sort of those things that are needed to squeeze out extra yards." And to me, David, we talked earlier about Mike Vrabel. You can kind of read him a little bit. You could almost, in my opinion, what he was saying about Nicolas Petit Frere, about doing those kind of things, you could almost hear him saying, "We have not been getting that from Andre Dillard." And that's kind of the one thing that everybody has been trying to figure out about Andre Dillard. When you talk to him, you don't necessarily get a sense of that kind of that burning fire, competitive edge. And not everyone gives that off, and doesn't mean they're a bad player. But that's kind of the one question mark I think a lot of people have, at least in their dealings with Andre Dillard, is that competitive fire always there? And when Mike Vrabel said those things about Nicolas Petit Frere, I to me, he was almost saying we don't see that from Andre Dillard. So I suspect that we'll see Nicolas Petit Frere there going forward for at least the short term. And I think we probably also have to cut him a little bit of slack. Like I said, the numbers weren't very good, but A, that was his first game of the year, obviously, after the suspension. And B, as we talked about, two, first time on the NFL level playing left tackle. He hadn't done that since his last year in college. So kind of hard to imagine putting, Dillard, you signed him to a 3-year, $29 million deal, and maybe he's out of a starting job going into week 7, but I think that's the way that it's going to go right now.
Yeah, three years, $29 million looks like a bad investment at this point. Of course, the Titans will be able to cut him next year, presumably, if that's what they decide they need to do. And you wonder if this is a time also, as we've discussed, do you maybe slide Peter Skoronski out there to the tackle position and see if you maybe put Radins back in at left guard, and that gives you a little more beef and athleticism that way. Maybe that's something to come, but certainly that there's going to be a lot of discussion in the coaches' offices about the offensive line and the issues there. As we wrap this thing up, I can't let this thing pass without noting, in case people have missed it early this week, the Philadelphia Eagles have signed Julio Jones to their practice squad with the intention to put him on the active roster by the end of the week. It is the Julio Jones AJ Brown show, part two. It's 2 years down the road. Dinard, do you think things will work out better for Julio in Philadelphia than they did with the Titans? Is this going to be the pairing that AJ Brown dreamed of when he was here and was so excited when the Titans traded for him a couple of years ago?
No. If it did happen in Tennessee, it won't happen in Philly because they already have two studs already in front of him. So that's probably just an insurance policy right there. And I wonder how many reps is he going to get in the game. I mean, if you look at that receiving core, David, they're good. That is a unit right there.
I mean, they do have an injury to Quez Watkins, and it sounds really nice. Julio Jones is your number three wide receiver behind AJ and Devontae Smith, and maybe he only plays 20 snaps a game or whatever, but you just wonder if Julio has anything left in the tank at this point, and good for him. I mean, I applaud any player who can play as long as he wants to play. Most guys will tell you the game is done with you before you're done with the game. Julio's clearly not done, and he goes to a good team, going to take another shot at a Super Bowl here, like he tried to do last year with Tampa. We'll see how it works out for him. John, you have any reason to think we're going to see any flashes of the old Julio?
No, I don't think so. I thought it was very interesting. In fact, today I read one of the comments that he had. I guess he had his introductory day with the media today, and somebody asked him, hey, what do you think a guy your age and so forth has left? And Julio's response was, "Have left," he said. "Just keep watching, and I'll show you." He said, "We'll revisit this question," and I immediately went back to the first day that he met with the Titans media, or maybe it was his first practice, and he was asked that similar question, and he sort of gave it one of those "stay tuned," I think was the 2-word response he had there, and we all stayed tuned, but we didn't ever see the old Julio there. We didn't really see much of it when he was with Tampa Bay, for a stretch last year. I think maybe, again, if he's in a fourth receiver role or something like that, hey, that's not a bad thing. He's not going to wear out his hamstring too bad, but I just think right now there's too much wear and tear, and we're not going to see any magic, I don't think, necessarily from Julio Jones.
Yeah, I guess that's right. The expectations for him there will be much more reasonable than they were for his one season here. But that's just going to be fun watching. If it works out, AJ Brown I think will be the happiest guy on earth. But AJ has been pretty happy anyway, seemingly since he left Tennessee. We will be back next week and try and put a happier spin on things as we look forward to the Falcons game. Until then, Denard Walker, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you, David.
John Glennon, thank you.
Okay, thank you, guys.
And thank you all for listening to Believe in Titans.